Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, November 12, 2019. A court in Kenya dismisses a case against a group of South Sudanese who were unofficially accused of trying to overthrow President Kiir.
Well, I understand the embassy were accusing some of the accused persons of trying to overthrow the government and creating instability.
And after the media authority revoked the credentials of a journalist, a top South Sudan official says accreditation isn't pulled unless the reporter did something wrong.
What I know is that there is no journalist who can be sent away unless proved to have written controversial report, unless he is proved to have written a hate speech.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A journalist who has worked for years in South Sudan covering events for the Associated Press has been told to leave the country. The South Sudan Media Authority confirms it has revoked Sam Mednick's press credentials, accusing her of reporting false information. Amnesty International and the Foreign Correspondents Association of East Africa have both condemned the move. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Elijah Allier, managing director of the South Sudan Media Authority, refused to have his voice recorded but confirms freelance reporter Sam Mednick's credentials were revoked last month after the authority found her of misreporting information on South Sudan. Allier says Mednick reported for the Associated Press there was tension in the country ahead of the formation of a unity government, something he says is incorrect. Mednick posted a tweet saying, after almost 3 years of reporting from South Sudan, my press pass was revoked for 6 months because I was told I concocted misinformation intended to create panic and a fear of the unknown. Mednick tweeted, this is extremely disheartening for her and called it yet another troubling sign for press freedom in South Sudan. When asked to comment on the situation, Mednick referred South Sudan in Focus to AP. Lauren Eston, AP Global Director of Media Relations and Corporate Communications, responded, saying, quote, Sam Mednick, a regular freelancer for AP in South Sudan, was stripped of her press accreditation in the country in response to a recent story she wrote for the Associated Press. AP stands by Mednick and her story, end of quote. Eston further says, quote, the government's decision to revoke Mednick's credentials is the latest example of South Sudan authorities cracking down on independent journalists and an affront to press freedom, end of quote. Allier confirmed the information in Mednick's tweet and said once she abides by the authorities' order, she will be free to return to work in South Sudan. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe had this to say about Mednick's treatment by the media authority, which is run by the government.
What I know is that there is no journalist who can be sent away unless proved to have written controversial report, unless he is proved to have written a hate speech, unless he is proved to have encouraged division and so forth within the South Sudanese community.
Amnesty International called the move an assault on press freedom in South Sudan. And in a statement released earlier this month, referred to Mednick's treatment as deeply troubling. Saif Magango is Deputy Regional Director for Amnesty International in East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes region.
The case of Sam
from the AP, her license for operating in South Sudan was suspended for a period of 6 months, but all of this is simply an assault on the freedom of journalists to do their jobs, and all of this is something that is unacceptable.
The Foreign Correspondents Association of East Africa, or FCA, released a similar statement on Medenik's revocation of press credentials, saying it represents a worrying escalation in the repression of the free press in South Sudan, adding that over the last few years, FCA found it increasingly difficult to travel and report on South Sudan. When contacted by South Sudan in Focus for comment, the FCA declined to comment. The association called on the international community, especially the diplomatic community of South Sudan and East Africa, to prioritize press freedom in the region. Magango called on South Sudanese authorities to respect press freedoms, calling it a part of human rights.
The South Sudanese authorities have to respect the freedom of journalists. Freedom of press is a fundamental aspect in human rights. They are there to do their jobs, and they have to be left to do their work.
According to Reporters Without Borders' latest global media report, South Sudan is ranked 139 out of 180 countries on its global media index. The global media body says this follows a disastrous record of journalist murders compounded by arbitrary arrests, torture, and threats from South Sudan politicians in recent years. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A Kenyan court has thrown out the case against a group of young South Sudanese who were accused of unlawful assembly after the group of four staged a protest in Kenya. The lawyer who represents the four, Paul Ogendi, says there was not enough evidence to show the young men were trying to overthrow President Kiir.
Yeah, so the official charges were unlawful assembly. And of course, there was those allegations which were not formally brought before the court.
And what were those allegations that were not brought formally before the court?
Well, I understand the embassy were accusing some of the accused persons of trying to overthrow the government and creating instability.
From your legal perspective, how is the case proceeding?
Well, we've been attending court since July, and for the better part, we've gone there five times. The government could not produce witnesses to support their case.
You mean the government of South Sudan?
No, the government of Kenya. You see, criminal proceedings are brought in the name of the government of Kenya, because it's in Kenya we are handling this case. So we had given them time to prepare their prosecution, and they were not able to pull through or to put together a case.
It's my understanding that this youth who had gone out to demonstrate or protest had a police permit for their protest, correct?
What I saw from the documents provided was a letter, a notification. We do not issue permits as a right, because the right to assembly is a human right here in Kenya. So what usually is required is that you notify the police, and if they have any problem, they can ask you not to take part in the assembly or to proceed with it.
Looking at this case, how do you see the end?
Yesterday, we managed to force the prosecution to withdraw the case.
As we speak now, there's no case against this youth in court in Kenya.
As we speak now, the case has been withdrawn under Section 87 of the Criminal Procedure Code, and they will be coming back if they get evidence. They will charge them afresh.
Meaning the government of Kenya will charge the youth afresh if there's any tangible evidence that they were trying to overthrow the government of South Sudan?
If they have any other credible, tangible evidence, they can profile any charges, including assembly, which was unlawful assembly, or any other crime they might prefer.
How did it all start, where the Kenyan government is accusing the youth? I thought it was the South Sudan embassy that complained, and then the case was brought forward.
So I think it all started during the Independence Day for South Sudan, and a number of South Sudanese refugees in Kenya had an event next to their embassy. I'm not sure who made the report, but some of them were arrested in that context, including the three. I think the three were arrested in that context, and that is how I got involved.
That was Paul Ogendi, a lawyer representing the young South Sudanese men who were accused of unlawful assembly in Kenya, whose case was dropped. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Nairobi. Some Sudanese veterans and pensioners are calling on the transitional government in Sudan to reinstate officers who were fired arbitrarily. They are also calling on the government to pay the pensions of officers who have reached retirement age. Michael Atit has more on that story for VOA from Khartoum.
More than 100,000 Sudanese junior and senior army officers in Khartoum say they were laid off from the military service over the past decades for no clear reason. Salahuddin Abdallah Khidir was stripped of his rank as a major general in late 2010. Abdallah says since then he has not returned to active military service since that time. He says the government provided no official explanation for his termination. Speaking in Arabic, he says he wants the transitional government to pay his pension and related benefits.
There are those who have been arbitrarily released from the service. There are those who lost their ranks on political ground. There are those who are wounded heroes from the front lines. All these are not getting any pension till now. The Pension Act for the Army is now suspended. These are things we demand the new army leadership to tackle.
Abdallah says the Sudanese Veterans Association should be reformed and register all Sudanese soldiers who were forced to leave the army so they can receive their full pensions.
There is no army in the world that can release up to 10,000 officers at once. Currently, what we have in our list is 107 army officers within Khartoum state alone, apart from the other states. So this indicates that the real Sudanese army that we knew in the 1960s and 70s doesn't exist anymore.
First Sergeant Sadia Ibrahim Sharif says she was ordered to go on unpaid vacation in 2007. Since that time, no one from the military has contacted her to say she can resume her work. Speaking in Arabic, Sharif says for at least 10 years, she has not had enough money to pay for school fees, medication or food for her 5 children.
In my understanding about a special vacation is that you will stay and can be called any time to resume your work. I don't understand my fate until now. I was not even told that I am dismissed from my work.
Sharif says she has received no benefit from the military, nor was she ever promoted during her years of service. Retired Brigadier General Jamal Muhammad Ahmed retired in 2018. Muhammad says since that time, he has received only 10,000 Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of less than $200 a month. Speaking in Arabic, he says that is very little compensation compared to years of service he and many other military officers have given to their country.
We have some of our officers who've been working in the front line and are wounded or crippled down and are sent to a pension list. Some are still not getting their pay, or others are getting something very little and does not cover the needs of their children. So this has affected many of us.
Muhammad says some veterans have become beggars on the streets and in marketplaces. He is calling on the country's new military leaders to consider increasing veterans' pensions. Sudanese army officials were not immediately available to comment on this story. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Health agencies indicate South Sudanese children are dying from pneumonia at an alarming rate. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you make the best use of your time?
I do the right thing in the right place and with the right person.
I think sometimes when I help out, like volunteering, I would really love that. I use the best of my time by volunteering and also helping others besides the volunteering.
If I'm not doing basketball, I go maybe meet new friends. That is creating network. In the future, it will be helpful.
I'm a literature student, so I can use my time to read novels so that I get to know about things that I don't know.
The best use of my time is on educational processes. Like, I give the best time for reading, like in the morning. So most of the time I spend is on the reading program.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we're talking about World Pneumonia Day and the number of young South Sudanese children dying from pneumonia. A new report by Save the Children and the UN Children's Agency UNICEF estimates more than 7,000 children under the age of 5 died from pneumonia in South Sudan last year alone. The agencies are calling on the government to redouble its efforts to tackle the deadly disease. A UNICEF official says the death toll underscores how important it is for the government and health agencies to work together to improve the country's health care delivery system. Lasuba Memo has the story for VOA from Juba.
Dao R, a four-month-old baby boy, cries at the Al-Sabah Children's Hospital, where he is being treated for pneumonia. Speaking in Arabic, the baby's mother, 23-year-old Adil Manyok, says Dao was diagnosed with acute pneumonia yesterday. She says she brought her baby to Al-Sabah after watching his health deteriorate day by day, despite visiting other Juba area health clinics.
When we brought him here, he got some medication and is a little better today. At first, when we brought him here, he was in a critical condition.
Didor Lam, a clinical officer at Al-Sabah, says the baby was experiencing distress in his chest.
There is high fever, there is short of breathing, there is cough. This time when we take it clinically, we diagnose the child as severe pneumonia. After that, we send the child to the lab. We take the CBC, which is a complete blood count, and then we check the malaria.
CBC stands for complete blood count, a laboratory test. On average, Lam says the hospital receives 300 sick children a day. He says about 15 of them are usually diagnosed with pneumonia.
During the day, in OPD duties, we receive more than 300 to 350 patients during a day, in outpatient. And then when we receive the child, we admit some of them. Like this child, we admit him from yesterday, he take 24 hours in emergency ward. Today we refer them to the another ward.
OPD refers to the outpatients department. Save the Children and UNICEF said in a joint statement released yesterday that pneumonia is one of the leading killers of children in South Sudan, which caused the deaths of 20% of the children under the age of 5 in 2019 due to inequality, poverty, and lack of access to health services. Dr. Arif Iqbal is UNICEF's immunization manager in South Sudan.
Every hour, one child dies of pneumonia in the country, which is a very alarming situation. This is our future, and we need to save our future from this.
Dr. Iqbal attributes the high rate of pneumonia-related deaths in South Sudan in part to low vaccination rates of children under 5.
We can say that this would be related to low vaccination coverage, the children immunity and nutrition level, availability and access to the health quality healthcare services. So these all contribute towards this pneumonial deaths.
Worldwide, 802,000 children under the age of 5 died from pneumonia in 2018, more than from any other disease, according to Save the Children and UNICEF, and 437,000 children under age 5 died from diarrhea, while 272,000 died from malaria. To reduce pneumonia-related deaths in South Sudan, Dr. Iqbal says 8 agencies are developing response mechanisms that include early detection of the disease.
We have to develop a full battery of the community health workers who can address, who can identify the pneumonia at early stages, treat the mild cases and refer the serious cases to the healthcare facilities where they can be treated. Thirdly, we have to come to the healthcare facilities, right? We have to train our healthcare professionals on the proper diagnosis and management of pneumonia, as well as we have to ensure the availability of the required medicines, including antibiotics and other, you know, support medicines at all these health facilities.
Dr. Iqbal says until that happens, pneumonia-related deaths will likely remain high in South Sudan. Pneumonia is caused by bacteria, viruses and fungi. For VOA News, I am Nasuba Memo in Juba.
The German government has donated 10 million euros, the equivalent of $10.9 million, to the United Nations World Food Program to provide food assistance to communities hard hit by widespread flooding in South Sudan. A WFP official who just returned from Pibor, one of the most flood-affected areas, says there is a real emergency there which needs immediate response. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the details for VOA from Juba.
WFP Country Director for South Sudan, Matthew Hollingsworth, says the German government's donation will put a major dent in the amount the UN agency says it needs to respond to the humanitarian emergency caused by flooding in several counties across South Sudan. He says the money will be used for life-saving humanitarian and resilience activities and to respond to ongoing flooding.
The World Food Program is saying we need $40 million urgently just to meet the next 3 months needs for around 750,000 people who need emergency food assistance. That's only for the next 3 months.
Heavy rains beginning in July caused floods that have washed away thousands of homes and crops and displaced nearly a million people, especially in the Greater Upper Nile and Bahr Ghazal regions of former Jonglei, Bahr Ghazal and former Upper Nile estates. Majai Lul lives in Bia Estate. Speaking in Arabic, Lul says, "It is hard to get anything done when the entire area is underwater.
We cannot move anywhere because the whole area is full of water. And even if there is any place where there is food, you cannot go there to bring it."
Lul says people in his village of Wad are struggling to find higher ground in fear of more heavy rains.
"The whole land is full of water, and as I speak to you now, I am in the water. The water has flooded all over the houses."
Last month, the government declared a state of emergency in Greater Bahr Ghazal, Greater Upper Nile, and the Greater Equatorial regions and made an urgent appeal for humanitarian intervention. Hollingsworth says the WFP is ramping up its operations to provide aid to the most flood-affected communities across South Sudan.
"People have lost their homes, they've lost animals, Their livestock have either drowned, their sheep, their goats. In some cases, their cows have drowned if the floods have been particularly high. And very worryingly now, in areas where the floodwaters are staying, the pasture land is underwater. So even if their animals were safe and they managed to keep them safe, where are those animals now going to feed for the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks?
Hollingsworth describes the flood situation as acute, with so many people having to move from their homes to high ground as flood water levels rise to the top of their roofs in areas of Upper Nile and Bahr Ghazal.
The scale of the crisis is great. There are 31 counties in what were the six other, of the old states that have been affected. So this is not a small flooding operation in one area of the country. It's in a large area of the country, and that's what's really worrying.
Hollingsworth says this is the worst flooding in 40 years for this part of Africa. The UN said in a statement last week that it needs $61 million to save lives and to ensure the continuity of response to flood victims. Hollingsworth says the UN Central Emergency Fund is considering providing funds that would help cover food and basic services for flood-affected communities across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency reports hundreds of thousands of displaced people in the Democratic Republic of Congo's North Kivu and Ituri provinces are living in abject poverty and subject to mass human rights violations. Lisa Schlein has this report for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
A wave of brutal attacks by armed groups in North Kivu and Ituri provinces in June triggered the flight of some 300,000 people, mainly women and children, from their homes. The UN Refugee Agency says these forcibly displaced people are living in dire conditions with host communities. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balar says the civilians are unprotected, subjected to extreme human rights violations on a daily basis, and living in fear of death and destruction.
5 months on from the June attacks, killings, sexual violence, and abductions persist amid continuing conflict. Many women and children are still living in precarious conditions, sleeping in the open or in the overcrowded public spaces, further exposing them to risks of harassment, assault, or sexual exploitation.
About 100 different armed groups are operating in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Balar says many of the violations taking place are linked to decades-long conflicts among these groups and the government, as well as inter-ethnic violence and the illegal exploitation of mineral resources. He tells VOA the conflict and brutality against the civilian population are overshadowed by an ongoing Ebola epidemic in the region.
That's a really worrying and dangerous mix of everything happening in there. We have heard of reports, you may already have heard it here, that many of the health clinics have been attacked and not spared as well in those parts of the DRC.
The UNHCR is stepping up its response to the growing displacement crisis in eastern DRC. It is deploying additional staff to the area. It is providing basic non-food relief and has built communal hangars and emergency family shelters to help keep the displaced safe. The agency, however, says it is seriously short of cash. Without additional funds, the UNHCR warns it will not be able to continue its support for these desperate people. The agency reports it has received only 57% of the $150 million needed to run its humanitarian operations in DRC this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Yare by Kamal Tarbas. We've been listening to Kamal Tarbas with the song Yare. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles this evening. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
تعبت البحر وما سمع به.